I'm just going to set the scene here. 1984. Okay? Me and Barbara knew each other in 1984. My best friend was Brian Walker, and Brian and Barbara were boyfriend and girlfriend. Back in the day, and my buddy, I mean, that's all he ever used to talk about was Barbara. And, you know, we did some running back in the day, and I was blind running back in those days. I don't remember a whole lot. 1984 was the – I had played football, baseball, and basketball every year until 1984. 1984, I just got – and so it was just a big blur. But we're honored to have her tonight. She's, you know, she's stays at the Wild House and does a lot of stuff. But I'm going to let her sponsor kind of – Do the real baptism here.
Lisa is her sponsor. Thank you.
Hi, y'all. My name's Lisa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lisa.
And how I came to be Barbara's sponsor is she practically tackled me to the ground. She said, "Will you be my sponsor?" I said, "No, I have too many people." And she said, "No." That's what she said. She said, "No, that's not acceptable." She said, "You have to be my sponsor." I said, "But I have too many people. It's not fair to you. It's not fair to them." "Well, would you take me temporary? You've got to be my sponsor." And, you know, she's by that time tearful and everything, and I'm thinking, okay. And so that's been well over a year ago. And in that time, she has pretty much done everything I've asked of her. That's why she's speaking tonight. And, you know, we've been through a lot of blood, sweat, and tears for sure in that year and a half. And she's trudged that road. You know, she's taken it one step, one day at a time, one hour at a time for sure. And I see a lot of strength in her. And I'm humbled by how strong and how determined she is to have this way of life and her persistence. And she's been through a lot to get here, and she doesn't want to leave.
That's good.
I'll turn it over to your speaker.
All right.
Thank you for allowing me to speak here tonight. I can't say that it was my idea, because it wasn't. But I do have a wonderful sponsor, and I want what she has, you know. And she has 29 years of sobriety, and I want it, and I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
Okay. And I stand here tonight to just tell you, of course, I can't tell you every little detail of my life, but I want to make sure I hit on the points that, you know, just every point I can possibly get in within 45 minutes. I was born in Texas. I'm 43 years old. My father was in the Air Force. My mother was a stay-at-home mom and a bartender. Her and my father split up when I was a baby. They both had a drinking problem, so her being a bartender was a great profession. You know, it was the best one for her. But so they split up, and I went with my mom. Me, my brother, and sister went with my mom. I have a brother and a sister, both older. There's 2 years difference in between us. My brother's the oldest, and my brother was always in trouble, always. You know, she was married to my sister and brother's father. She was pregnant with my brother, cheated on him, and got pregnant again by a different man. And so he found out about it, and they split up. And my mom kept it a secret, you know, and said that they had the same father. So I had a different daddy, so I was teased my whole life by them, you know, because, we're real brother and sister. You know, you don't belong, you know. And so my father originally, once that had happened, he actually adopted them, and they came to know my father as their father. So my father, when he wasn't drinking and drunk, he was a Bible thumper. I remember many mornings, you know, when I would be spending the weekend with him or whatever, laying in bed with him, reading me the Bible. You know, there's three things you don't do, and that's you don't drink, do drugs, you don't smoke, and you don't break any of the Ten Commandments. I said, so, you know, that was drilled in my head. And he was Baptist, and my mom was Church of Christ. Well, she wasn't, but she made sure we were. She, every Sunday, you know, regardless of whether she got up with us or not, she put us on the bus to go to church every Sunday. So that started at a young age. And so I believed in God, who I choose to call my higher power today. You know, I feel like even though she knew she couldn't do right, she was going to see to it that we knew who God was. And so my father ended up traveling around a lot, being in the armed forces, and being with my mom being a bartender, we were taken to the sitters, you know, and she worked evenings, so we would get there. She'd drop us off maybe an hour or two before work and not pick us up till maybe when the sun came up the next day. So we had different sitters throughout my life, you know, as a young child, you know. We didn't keep the same sitter for very long. There was a lot of fondling, touching, a lot of sexual abuse going on. You know, I can remember... you know, just being very young and being touched inappropriately, you know, by the babysitter's son, you know. And every day she would make us lay down and take a nap together. So, you know, after that, we got to stay at home by ourselves as we got a little bit older because, of course, the babysitter's expensive and, you know, my brother, of course, he was more than capable of watching us, you know. The one that he was robbing Coke machines, trying to get the change out, and yeah. You know, just all kinds of stuff. He was into everything. But my father had the opportunity to travel to Germany with the Air Force, and he asked, you know, if we would like to come. And so at that time, you know, I didn't get to see my mom that much, so I agreed to go, you know, and then my brother and sister, we all went. And it was terrible, absolutely terrible. I was there for a year, and my father stayed drunk the whole time. He was threatened by the Air Force base that, you know, they were going to take him to court, and he was going to lose us, so... After a year, he sent us back to the States, and my mom got us back. And then, you know, like I said, we were staying home by ourselves from the sitters and going to school and stuff. And a family member, he was my uncle, he molested me. And you know, I might skip around a lot, y'all. I'm sorry. I'm a little nervous. But he molested me. And one night we were sitting at the kitchen table. I'll never forget it. And it was me, my brother and sister, my sister's husband, and my mom. And we were drinking. You know, that's what we did, gather around the table and pass the bottle, you know. So we were sitting there. And I said, you know, Mom, there's something I need to tell you. And I said, I haven't had, you know, I really didn't know if you'd believe me, so I didn't, you know, I never mentioned it. And so I told her about it, and she started crying, you know, and she was mad. And but come to find out, he had molested my sister and brother as well. And, you know, it was a very, very sad moment. But anyway, my uncle is deceased now. And she never said anything to my aunt about it, you know. But as growing up, I felt very abandoned. I felt like I was all alone. I felt like I was an outcast. And I tried so hard, you know, to make the perfect grades. I was cheerleader. I was in the band. I was I was everything, you know, thinking, okay, I'm going to do this, and she's going to really know I'm here, you know. She's going to pay attention to me. She's going to love me. And, you know, it didn't matter what I did. She didn't love me. I mean, I felt, I learned as a child I was a mistake, you know, because I wasn't supposed to be here. And, you know, when you're little and you hear your mom call you stupid and hear her say you're a mistake, you kind of go through life feeling that way, you know, and I did. And my sister eventually moved in with my father. And she was actually closer to my father than I ever was. And my mom hated the relationship that I had with my father when I was little. I was a daddy's girl, but why not? My mom wasn't, you know, emotionally capable of giving me what I needed, you know, as a child. So I'll never forget, my mom had remarried, and I was over at my stepfather's mother's house. And one morning, she got a call, and she said, "Barbara, it's your daddy." And so I picked up the phone thinking it was my dad, you know. And I said, "This don't sound like my dad." And he said, "How would you like to earn some money?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean? You know, I'm a little kid. I'm 7 years old, you know." And he said, "I'm going to rape you." And he hung up the phone. Well, you know, I didn't know what rape meant. You know, I'm a kid. So I ran and told my grandmother, and she had a fit. She called my mom, was telling my mom. My mom came over, you know, got off, come over, and was telling me what that meant, you know. And then it scared the hell out of me, you know. I'm thinking somebody's going to kill me or, you know, whatever. But anyway, my mom said that she traced the call, and it came from my father's house. And when she told me that, I went through all these different emotions, you know, and, you know, like, well, maybe he was drinking. Maybe he just don't remember, you know. Maybe he did do it. And then I got real angry and bitter towards my father, and it came out. You know, I told him. And he said, "Barbara, I would never do that to you." And, you know, he said, "I promise you, I would never do that to you. You're my only child. You know, why would I do that? Your mom's lying and all this." So anyway, there's a big spat there. And, you know, I live with my mom most of my life, so I tended to take my mom's side, you know. And it really put a wedge between me and my father. And I didn't even talk to him for 8 years at one point over this. And so, you know, my mom was married a total of 9 times. There was, you know, between 9 different fathers, there was, you know, a lot of inappropriate action, inappropriate behavior. And, you know, it was nothing for me to come home from school and her have the U-Haul packed up and say, "Let's go." You know, where are we going? You know, I mean, I had no idea where I was going to end up. Here goes all my friends out the window again, you know. And it was just really, it was embarrassing, you know. But, let me see. When I was 12, years old, the first time I used marijuana, I got high and I got drunk for the first time when I was 12. You know, with my mom being an alcoholic, she would, you know, set blankets on fire or whatever, so I felt like I had to stay up and babysit her. You know, like I was scared to death if I went to sleep that something bad, something terrible was going to happen. So I usually stayed up with her, and I wouldn't go to sleep until after she did. And I'd like get up in the morning and find her naked and passed out in different places of the house, or, you know. And I, you know, my mom, I think in order to raise 3 kids, bartending really doesn't put out that much money. You know, I believe that she was prostituting. And I say that because there was a lot of different men in and out, and you know, it didn't matter what color, it, you know, or it just what it just didn't matter. So, and then finding her, you know, when I woke up in the morning, passed out naked in different places of the house, pretty much told me, you know, that that's what she was doing. So, you know, I loved and I hated my mom all at the same time. I had, you know, it was very, very, it was kind of like enmeshment also, you know, kind of like I felt like I was her, or I don't know. Sometimes I felt like I was the parent. And, you know, when I was 12 and she was working all these hours and stuff, or she was, you know, gone all night, me and my brother and sister started living it up, boy. We was out running wild, you know. And when I was 12, like I said, I smoked weed and got drunk for the first time. And on my very first drunk, I woke up naked in the hallway, and I had been puking. My very first drunk, okay? And I thought, oh, my God, you know, my sister, she was like, I wonder if Mama saw you, you know? And I said, well, shoot, what difference does it make? It's not like she ain't like this every night, you know? But so I think I started doing things to try to get back at her. Like, see how you made me feel when you did this? You know, we were brought up to say yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. We were taught to be seen and not heard. You do not make any noise because I'm trying to sleep and I've been drunk and I got a headache. So, you know, you're not allowed to make a lot of noise. You're not allowed to. I couldn't cry. I wasn't able to laugh. You know, I couldn't show facial expressions. And I think to this day, you know, I still have a hard time with that because I can be emotionless but still be thinking, God, I really want to cry right now. You know, and my brother is in he's in jail now. He's a heroin addict, and my sister kind of escaped it. And I don't know if that's from living with my father or, you know, because he finally, before he died, he had 25 years clean from alcohol. So I don't know if, you know, him taking her to church, you know, on a regular basis had something to do with that. In his household, I'm sure it did. But, you know, also I know it's hereditary too. But when I was 15, I really hated my mom. I really, there was no love there. You know, I just felt a real anger towards my mom. And so I got married at 15, you know, and that was to get the hell out of the house. I couldn't take it no more. She wouldn't talk to me half the time. And she wasn't there half the time, you know. So I got married at 15, and we were living in Florida at the time. I came back to Nashville, and life was nothing but a party because, you know, we drank. We drank on weekends, and we just did cocaine. We drank, whatever, you know. And so I ended up quitting school. I was still in high school. I quit high school, and I went back, though, and I finished night school. I got pregnant when I was 17 with my first child, and little help did I get from his father. We actually ended up splitting up several times. There was abuse there, like I said, drugs, infidelity. Just a little bit of everything, you know. It was very unhealthy, but at that point in my life, he showed me love, and that's what I felt like I was searching for, that love that I didn't get as a child. And he was always there, you know. He was always there by my side, and you know, that I think that was the whole reason for me wanting a baby, that this is my baby, and nobody can take this baby away from me. You know, this baby will love me unconditionally, and that's what I've been searching for. So I had the baby, and you know, he actually, we were married 8 years, and he started turning his life around and really being a good father and a husband, you know. But then it was too late. There had been so much damage done, so much abuse, and I just I couldn't make it work. I didn't want to work anymore. So I divorced him, and I married again. I was going to school and working part-time at the Waffle House. I married a district manager from the Waffle House, and I married him. I was pregnant, so I married him. That's the right thing to do. You go to Church of Christ, that's what they tell you, you know. You marry him. So I did. But anyway, he was a pill addict, and I didn't abuse pills. I drank. I would drink and do a little cocaine, you know, if I had the opportunity. But it wasn't, it wasn't in every day or every week occasion. It happened when it happened, you know. Some friends come over and they had it. Well, yeah, we was going to do it. But he was a pill addict, and he turned me on to pills, and I loved it. I felt like that was it. That was for me. The pills was, I felt good about myself. I had the confidence to say what I felt and to not hold back, you know, to actually be somebody, you know, somebody that I couldn't have been before without them. So being pregnant, I didn't start abusing pills until after I had the baby. And then after I had my son, his name, I'm not going to tell you his name. he's 20, though. Anonymity, right? But anyway, I started abusing pills. We both did. And he was also an alcoholic. But at that time, you couldn't have told me I was an alcoholic because I didn't drink every day. You know, I might have drank on the weekends or maybe once a month. But because I didn't drink every day, I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I drank, but the problem was when I drank, I couldn't stop drinking. I drank until I passed out or puked or something, you know, something bad happened. It always did because I couldn't quit. And so he carried on his drinking. Well, I wanted the pills, you know, that's what I wanted. And so... him being he was a very abusive alcoholic. When he drank, he wanted to fight, and he wanted to use me as a punching bag. And so I divorced him and moved back home with Mom. And as you could imagine, that was great. I have two kids now living with Mom. And I had a good job. I had worked for the bank, for First American Bank, for a couple years while I was married to him. And then when I moved in with my mom, I had worked for Vanderbilt Hospital. And she was steadily drinking. And working for Vanderbilt during the week, I worked weekends at Waffle House part-time. So... I had a guy that had been stalking me, and I broke it off with the guy, and the guy couldn't accept no as an answer. He beat my ass. he beat me worse than I've ever been beaten. But I actually went downtown and pressed charges, and Vanderbilt had also pressed charges because he was calling, you know, he kept calling me at work, calling. They take my phone out of my cubicle. He's calling on everybody else's phone around me. And then I would be walking through the hospital, and the little red emergency phones on the wall, he'd be calling. Yeah. And so if I went to Medical Arts Pharmacy, the payphone hanging on the wall, he'd be calling. And so, yeah, I was scared to death. I was terrified. So, I set him up. I said, I tell you what. He was like, let's have some closure to this. Meet me for lunch. So I said, all right, yeah, I'll meet you for lunch. Pick me up in front of Medical Arts Pharmacy, and we'll go do lunch and put some closure to this. Mm-hmm. Had the police waiting on him. They picked him up. And Vanderbilt, I mean, he had like six charges all together, you know, on him when they arrest him. But when that happened, I was at a very, very dark point in my life. I was scared. I was terrified. He, you know, every time I looked out, he was driving by, you know, and I was just, I thought he was going to kill me. I really thought this man was going to kill me, you know, and I'd seen on TV these, you know, on the news, you know, or in movies where women went through this, and I thought, oh, bullshit, you know, you can do something about that. Well, until I was in that situation, I didn't really understand that. But I didn't understand the fear that was involved in that. But anyway, I went through that with him, and I had some friends, some male friends, you know, and this one in particular I used to hang out with quite a bit, and he was going to be taking a vacation and said, well, hey, won't you come stay, you know, spend the night at my house? And so he said, I'll be on vacation. You can sleep on the couch, you know, that way we can party and you ain't got to go nowhere. So I was going to take my son, my youngest son, with me, and, you know, I didn't. I asked my mom to watch my kids, and she said, okay, I tell you what, you got to be home, though, at 6:30 in the morning because, you know, I got to get up and go to work. So I said, all right, it's the deal. So I went out there. He lived in Nashboro Village. And right when I got there, it was so sweet. He had a drink waiting for me. Yeah. You know? It was so sweet. It was a margarita, but you could not see the lime drink mix with it. You know, it was just, and so you couldn't really taste it that much neither. But he had that, and he kept giving me shots of tequila, you know, and I hadn't eaten all day, you know. And let me back up a little bit. My mom had confronted me about a week prior to this that, Barbara, I think you have a pill problem. I think you need to get help. And I said, no, I don't. I'll stop. I'll just quit doing them. So I didn't know, though, they had a hold of me like they did, because I was having withdrawal really, really bad. And she even, you know, she noticed it. So she was like, here, take a Valium, honey. I know you're feeling so bad. So I took a Valium that night, too. So, you know, and did not eat anything. So I get there, and I am drunker and shit. I mean, right off the bat, you know. And next thing I know, he's on top of me, you know, trying to pretty much force himself on me. And I said, oh, no, wait a minute. And so we got into this confrontation, called me a whore and all this, you know, and all that kept flashing back was that the night that guy beat my ass, you know, really good. And I jumped up, ran to my car, and I proceeded to go home. Instead of calling a cab, I took it upon myself. I was so angry, I was so hurt and scared that I just said, you know, I can make it home. And so I lived in East Nashville. I was going down Briley Parkway, and I was really, really tired. The alcohol and the Valium was really affecting me. And so I was like rolling my window down, trying to stay awake. My eyes were so heavy. I had the radio up loud, smoking, you know, chain smoking, all the things you do to try to stay awake, and I fell asleep at the wheel. I was going 115 miles per hour. I hit the brick embankment in the center. It's right before you cross over the Cumberland River, and my car went airborne. And when I hit, the impact from me hitting that brick embankment, I think knocked me out. I mean, I think it just, you know, because I kind of am looking around and I'm up in the air and I'm like, oh my God, you know, I'm going to die. This is it. I'm going to die. And I'll say my prayers and stuff. And I landed on top of a gentleman coming in the opposite direction on Briley Parkway, and it decapitated him instantly. And it was a 55-year-old man, and he was on his way to work at the post office. And you know, when they put me in the back of that police car, you know, they found me, my car was airborne 20 feet, and then it flipped, and it was face down. And they had to pull me out there, and they put me in the back seat of the police car, and I remember everything was so black, I couldn't see anything, and all I kept hearing was, there's one deceased male, there's a deceased male, and I thought it was my child, because I did not remember if I had my child with me or not. So, you know, I keep thinking, but anyway, I was taken to jail, and I remember calling my mom and telling her, you know, I'm in jail. She said, for what? And I said, you know, I don't remember. I have no idea why I'm here. I had blood all over me and, you know, bruised, a solid bruise from head to toe, but I couldn't tell you why I was there. So she said, I tell you what, she said, call me back. I'm going to call up there and I'm going to find out what's wrong, what you did. And so I called her back. She said, honey, you're not getting out. And I said, what? What are you talking about? And she said, Barbara, you killed somebody last night. And you know I wanted to die. You know, I can imagine how that his wife felt, or his kids felt, getting that call to come down and identify your family member, you know. And my kids were 6 and 9 at the time. I literally wanted to die. So at that point, it didn't matter what happened to me. It didn't. You know, so I went to court, and my mom, my brother and sister was there. And his family was there. And I was sitting there and I was crying, you know. And I got up there though, no matter what I thought, you know, what kind of damage I thought it was going to do. I got up there and I told the truth, you know, and I told him about my addiction. I told him about, you know, my problem, my habits, and just everything. For the first time I ever got high till, you know, the age 28 when that happened. And judge said, well, you know something, Miss Montgomery, I can say this for you. You've been very honest with me. And, you know, I said, you know, the death penalty would not be enough for me right now, because I have to live with this for the rest of my life, every day,
You know, it's the first thing on my mind in the mornings and the last thing on my mind at night. So I was sitting there and I was crying. And his wife comes over to me. She said, "I forgive you." She said, "Can I pray with you?" So we prayed, and I got 8 years, and I went to Tennessee Prison for Women, which I served 4 years. My mom was terminally ill. She had emphysema and COPD. And when I got out, when I was released, I went and took care of her. She didn't have long to live, and my brother and sister kind of, you know, bailed and left it all to me when I got out, I guess. And, you know, I mean, hell, I'd been gone 4 years. It's your turn now. So that's what I did. I took care of her. And the very first time I had sex, when I got out, I got pregnant. Wouldn't you know?
Damn.
I said, "I will be damned." Are you serious? It's like, what else? What else, Lord? You know, so I was working a 40-hour-a-week job and taking care of mom and, you know, had baby monitors set up in my room so I could hear her during the night because she would call me, you know, all night, Barbara. So I need some water. I need to go to the bathroom. Because she would get, she had a bedside commode, and every time she got up to use it, her oxygen would drop. So I'd have to call 911, you know, and sit there and have to hold her up on the commode till they got there because I couldn't, you know, she was dead weight. There wasn't, I couldn't hold her. I couldn't get her up. So she's on a ventilator off and on. You know, and I was starting to get sick because when I get run down, I'm not sleeping like I should, or I'm not eating, you know, especially being pregnant, I was sick all the time. And every time I'd get a cold, she'd catch it because her immune system was so weak. And it broke my heart. It really broke my heart. You know, for the first time in my life, I saw her as somebody different, you know. I saw her as somebody that wasn't raised any better, didn't really know how to be a mama to me. And she was a mama to me, though, you know, before she died. She would hold me in her arms, you know. She would tell me she loved me and how proud of me she was. And she blamed herself for what I had done because she said, you know, this is just me living in your shoes. I don't know how to put it, but the fact that she never got caught and I did, you know, I basically followed down her same path, but I got caught for everything and she escaped that. And because she had several wrecks, every car she ever had, she wrecked because she was drinking and driving, you know. And, you know, she thought if she'd have been a better role model, that maybe I wouldn't have gotten myself into that, but I don't think that's true, you know. I think she did the best she could, and I just saw her as a very selfish person. And, you know, I think about what my kids must think about me, you know. I'm a pretty selfish person, you know. And, but anyway, my mom, when I was 8 months pregnant, I started bleeding. I had pneumonia. I knew I had pneumonia. I couldn't breathe. And I was coughing so bad, you know, and I had given it to her. So I was scared to leave her and go to the hospital to get treatment for myself because I was just afraid what might happen, you know. So I didn't. For 2 weeks, I was sick like that. Well, when I started bleeding, I knew I had to get to the hospital. So I went in. They tell me, you know, my oxygen level was 68. They thought the baby was dead, you know, and so they called a specialist in and checked the baby. She wasn't moving a whole lot, but she was okay. And they admitted me. So I had been there for 2 hours, and they called and told me my mom died. So I went into labor. I had that baby the same day my mama died. And, you know, it's like, I can't be happy that I just had a baby on the day my mom died, you know? So they was having to give me medicine to calm me down because I was just hysterical. Not hysteric, in hysterics. And so, you know, they buried my mom. I was still in the hospital. They buried her. And so I missed her funeral, and I thank God sure knew what he was doing because I don't think I could have handled that. And so when I got out of the hospital, you know, my mom had left us all an inheritance, and I had paid a year's rent on my apartment. And I had both my boys back. I had custody of my boys and had this newborn baby. And me and her father were not together. You know, he couldn't help me when I was taking care of my mom and struggling. Then he didn't need to be with me when she was born. And that's just how I looked at it. So right off the bat, him and his family gets DCS involved and tells him I'm not feeding this child. And she's got more food in the house than any of us do, you know. And, I mean, I've done a lot of things, but starved my babies, not one of them, you know. And I knew what he was doing. He was trying to get custody of her. I already knew. And I already saw it coming before I even had her. So I felt like they were pushing my buttons because they knew I was an alcoholic or they knew, you know, a pill head, whatever, or all the above, they wanted me to go over the edge. You know, they wanted to see me go over the edge, especially just losing my mom. Well, I did. And I was drinking and smoking crack, taking pills, you name it. It didn't matter. I didn't even know how to smoke crack. But I did. I was doing it, you know. I even called somebody, how you smoke crack? You know, just give me something. Give me something to ease this pain that I'm feeling, you know. And so I had been working at a home health agency, and I was on my way to get my check at work, and I had her in the back seat. I had not been using that morning, but previously, prior to that, the night before, yeah, I was using. So I was on Dickerson Road, and I guess, in my mind, it was okay because, you know what, I'm not drunk. I'm not drinking. It doesn't matter that I'm still high off pills that I did the night before. That don't matter, you know. So I was going down Dickerson Road, and I ran a red light with her in the car, and a vehicle hit me. And when they did, it's a wonder I didn't kill her, too. I went straight to jail, and she had a hairline fractured skull. I bonded out, and I went straight up to the hospital.
the next day when it came time to release her, DCS came up there and told me I wasn't taking her nowhere. And you know, I can't blame him for that. So, I wanted to die. And I tried. I took like 40-something muscle relaxers. And I ended up in ICU on a ventilator. You know, I thought, damn, I can't even kill myself right. So they violated my parole. I went back to prison. And she was out of my life. When I got out of prison, the only time I could see her is if I had sex with him. And I did it because I was willing to do that. To see my baby. But, you know, I kept kicking my ass and running, just running, running from this bullshit. Because I didn't want to feel this. So I stayed in my active addiction. I would get clean for a little while, but wouldn't last because I didn't care. I didn't fucking care no more. I had lost any and everything that ever meant anything to me. And, you know, my boys, they were angry. You know, they were angry also. And they had every right to be, you know. And they have their own lives to live now, you know. And, you know, when my mom died, they said, you know, my mom just died because they thought of my mom as their mom. So, you know, I robbed myself of, or this disease robbed me of ever being a mother to my kids, you know. And but today, you know what? I have hope because I have hope and I found hope in this program, you know, because without you guys, I wouldn't be here today. You know, when I don't show up at my meetings, y'all are the ones that call me. Y'all are the ones that come to my house wondering where I am, and I've never had a family. Y'all are my family today. I've never wanted to stay clean in my life, and I've made it over 2 years now, and that's a damn miracle. And, you know, I don't want my little girl, I don't want that in that gentleman who I've taken so much from to go unrecognized, you know. He was a Christian man. He was a good Christian man. And I think that, you know, I know God doesn't make bad things happen, but that's what it took for me. You know, because, I mean, what, you know, what a better person to use than, you know? But, you know, I have a great sponsor. And even though I've been in and out of the rooms, I've never gotten close to anybody. And I've never shared, you know, I speak for the Victims Impact Panel, but never have I tried to get close to anybody in these rooms because I don't want y'all to know how bad I feel, how, you know, what a monster I think I have been. And I know you hate that word, Lisa. What a monster I am. You know, I can't change what I've done. I can't change my past. But I can help somebody in the future, you know, or today. Maybe somebody sitting in here that's suffering now, you know, that's thinking about, you know, drinking and driving. Maybe this might come to mind, you know, before you drink and drive again. But I know I'm grateful for this program, and I'm grateful for these rooms, and I'm grateful for all of y'all here. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for showing up. Everybody that brought something. We really appreciate the attendance. We've had a great meeting. Once again, thanks to Barbara for sharing her story with us. You know, they told me a long time ago, find the winners and follow them, do what they do. And I've known Barbara. I've had the pleasure of knowing her for some time now. And she carries a message by carrying herself around that's pretty powerful stuff. And it takes a whole lot of cojones to get up here and share with a group. And there's a few people here. But, yeah, once again, thanks to Barbara.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it.
So works if you don't.
Barbara, you got to do this. I'm not...